You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
Okay, great. So today we've got, we're doing the networking panel. We're running a little bit behind. Sue said she wanted to get us started and to close the session around 11:10. And so we've got Alisa Campbell-Hart, who's here, our keynote this morning. We've got Sonny Pitts, and I'm going to have you introduce your background. And Ruby Sinich, is that correct?
It's close. It's close enough.
Okay, thank you. And so today we're talking about social networking, and so maybe we could get started talking about what is social networking and how has it changed since the incubation? Over time, we get questions from the audience. Certainly, if people come down, we've got the mic here. You can ask questions as well. So, Ruby, you want to start?
Okay, I'd love to.
Thanks.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Some Southerners here. You know how to respond. That's not necessary. This will be a little bit different from yesterday when I was sitting here. It's hard to believe you're here. I'll just give a little bit of background about why I'm sitting here in this case. This is completely different than why I was sitting here yesterday. In my professional life, I'm an activist. Obviously, you did pick up on that yesterday. But I'm in the field of how we use the internet as an organizing tool. Grassroots organizing is what has been done since there have been problems, which is since there have been humans. If you think of the civil rights movement, for example, organizing people together, building connections between people. And what the internet does is it allows us to do a lot of the same things. There are some similarities and some differences, but social networks are those same things that you used before, where you went and talked to your neighbors about something that concerned you, where you talked to your family, where maybe you debated issues with your family, or where people, during the Vietnam protests, people would form cells of people they trusted, because trust is a really important aspect of social networks. So I look at social networks as another part of the social fabric, and I look at how it can be used for creating social change, for activism, for advocacy, and things like that. And you all know how I feel about things, but it's not an inherently progressive thing. And there are absolutely people of every political stripe who use social networks to advance their causes. So it's not specific to the left or anything like that.
I wonder if I should. I want to talk about what I think makes an effective network, but I could save that if I want to sort of get introductions through. Would you rather, or my name?
Go ahead and tell us what you think is an effective network.
Okay, let me watch the clock here because I can put yeah. All the air. You don't know.
Well, I'll speak quickly.
Don't let me.
Let me see us gasping.
This is a term that I use in my work is network-centric advocacy, and I want to give credit for that term to Marty Kearns, who's a guy I used to work for, and we both are in the field of just trying to get more nonprofits to do this thing, network-centric advocacy. And what we look at are five different aspects that we think make networks work really well. The modern day equivalent then of citing some sort of more historic protests, the modern day equivalent is when a couple of bloggers notice something that they think is funky about news coverage, about a politician doing something, like Wayne Hudson, who learned about the pages, and Mark Foley, and he blogged about it, and then someone saw that on his blog, and they blogged about it, and 10 people saw that, and they blogged about it, and then 100 people saw that, and within about a day or so, it's like wildfire spreading across the blogosphere. And then at that point, the media are forced to address these issues, whether it's something they want to write about or not. And when that happens, there's no one who put out the talking point like, okay, today we're going to nail Mark Foley, here's the talking points. There's no organization orchestrating it, there's not even any individual leaders, like we used to have, telling everybody what to do, following, here's the action. Each individual person, each individual blogger in that case, is taking that and putting it in their own voice, talking about why they think this matters or why this outrages them. And the people who read their blog, who are in a way are their network, because I read people's blogs because, as you all know, I read blogs I agree with, which we're talking about yesterday, because I really respect those people's opinions, and this is exactly the kind of information I want to hear from them. Their blog about Mark Foley, that's some important information I might need to know too, or same thing on the local scale. So that's an example of a networked action, where it's literally the grassroots taking the action. There's no top-down orchestration of that. So that's the kind of effective network action I'm talking about. It doesn't have to be blogs, but we see it on blogs a lot. It's called swarming, too. They just act like a bunch of bees, almost going the same direction. Okay, so there's five aspects that we look at that I think make a network do that stuff really effectively. The first one is strong social ties, which includes trust, too. So the people in the network like each other and trust each other. Like, if I read a blogger that I don't like, then I'm not going to pick up on what they're writing about and go to blog about that, too. Because I don't trust them. I may think they're wrong or something like that. Similarly, if your friend asks you to come to a rally, if you don't like them, you know, and have some trust in them, then you're probably like, I'm not too into that. But if it's someone you really know and you know they're going to be writing about something that you care about, then you're going to leave them. You're going to go do it. So when you get information from people, you're thinking about your relationship with them. The second thing is having a dense communication grid. So a lot of ways to get in touch with each other, like on blogs. Not only can we all read each other's blogs, we can subscribe to RSS feed so that we can get the information from each other's blogs in any way that we want. Or if I don't read your blog, I read someone else who reads your blog, and so there's this dense network. And then there's also other ways that we meet. So we're also sometimes Twittering each other or seeing each other's Flickr pages or meeting at conferences. And all of those things are building up those social ties, too. So having a dense grid of opportunities to meet and build relationships builds the social ties part, too. The next aspect is having a common story, or it might be a narrative, like something that you all experienced together, or it might be a certain frame that you share about issues, so that when I speak about something, the language that I use makes sense to you, too, and you know what I'm talking about, instead of people who may agree on an issue, but use totally different language, so therefore think they disagree, or something like that. So again, all those opportunities to hear from each other, we're building up that common narrative as we go along. So one great example I use is the Sinclair Broadcast Group, which is a conservative TV net conglomerate owning stations all over the country. And they tried to air this documentary, Stolen Honor, in 2004 about John Kerry. But when they did that, the Daily Coast, the blog that we were talking about yesterday, they had already been talking about Sinclair. Who would have heard of them otherwise? But Daily Coast had been blogging about Sinclair and how they wouldn't let Ted Koppel read the names of all these fallen Iraq veterans. And they had preempted this program where he was doing that. So we already sort of had this sense of Sinclair, they're bad guys. I don't like to be binary like that, but it filled the story of, like, who are these folks? What are they all about? So then when we come out with Stolen Honor, we don't have to go, well, who's that? You know, whatever. So we already had that common story, that story in common. Let's see, the fourth aspect is shared resources, and this could be anything. Sometimes it's a blog space, like Blogger, where that's a resource that a bunch of people are all sharing together. It could be money that's shared, or space, or time, where if you have like a person sharing their time with others to get people, to help people blog, or to help people with anything. There could be grants available within a certain movement that would be a shared resource that would help people connect with each other. The fifth aspect is the hardest to describe, sometimes called meta, or sense of purpose. Does the people in the network actually feel that they are members of this network? Are they aware that this network exists? They might not call it that, but do they have a sense of membership of it? And do they have a sense of what the network is for? So, like, for example, if I went on Blogger and suddenly started trying to find dates there, and that's not really what Blogger is for, you know, that wouldn't be a very effective use of that network. Even though there's only some people there, maybe some of them wouldn't even be good candidates. But so a sense of both belonging to the network and knowing what it's for. If I instead went on nerve.com, I would be very welcome there looking for dates. So there's a right network and a right community for anything. So I'm sorry to take up so much time, but I find it was really helpful, and especially I like concrete stuff like that, so I can usually use this to to assess things, and then they go down those five things, which things are working here, which things aren't, and then, you know, how you can strengthen them and stuff like that.
Sonny, can you add to that? She's got a nice framework to work from. But...
yeah, I like the framework to work from. I'm Sonny. I guess I'm the sellout here. Most of my social networking has been done in a business sense. And I learned that I was going to be on this panel about, let's see, what was it, 8:30 last night? So I'm not terribly prepared in terms of specifically this panel, although some of my colleagues did point out where I was staying while I was here. So just so you know, I did stay at the Holiday Inn Express last night, so I should be smart enough to handle this today. So I'm going to bank on that. Most of my social networking experience has been in the business sector. Was the assistant community coach, still am actually, assistant community coach in the social networking, social capital and networking learning community in Coachville, which is a training facility for life coaches and business coaches. And in that capacity, I help design trainings, teleclasses, run the newsletters and stuff. Worked with Dr. Ivan Meisner, I don't know if you know him, from Business Networking International. Worked closely with him and with Kim George, who was the I guess sort of the person in charge of connectivity at Coachville, but with getting, you know, high level speakers to come in. So I like the idea of social networking as, you know, going virtual, because a lot of us are working at home. A lot of us are freelancers, solopreneurs. I'm a solopreneur, I work from home, and I will be honest, if this is my clientele, these are the people I've met in person. And most of those people I've met in person after I've been working with them for years. And some of the coach conferences that I went to when I was working with some of these coaches, I had been working with people for 2 or 3 years, couldn't pick them out of a lineup with them, a dog, and a box. So, but I knew them well enough to know what their cat's name was, what medication the cat was on, where they lived. You know, this is the things you talk about. I know a lot of people online. Where I'm at in Nashville, I know a handful of people, and I don't hardly work with any of them. So for me, the social networking in terms of the virtual networking has basically been a lifeline, in that I wouldn't have a job, I wouldn't have an income, wouldn't have a social life, wouldn't have friends for the most part if it weren't for the internet and social networking. And especially when it comes to forums, you know, blogs, that sort of thing. The less structured. I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on MySpace, Facebook, all that, but I don't do a lot with it. They're just there in case somebody kind of needs to find me. But, you know, if I'm running short on clients or whatever, I will go, say, jump on a coaching Google group or a networking Google group or a marketing Google group. I'm a copywriter and editor. And somebody will have a question, you know, should I do this on my blog? Should I do this on my, you know, Google Ads? And I'll make some pissy, witty, wonderfully smart comments. And literally within a week or so, I've got 2 or 3 people going, you know, I read what, you know, what you wrote, and I need to fix my about page, obviously. Or can you come look at my home page and tell me why it's not converting? And it takes a couple of days, and I've got clients again. Or I've got, you know, meeting some people in the field. And, you know, as you've seen here, I mean, I came here... I plan to come here, planning to just kind of chill out, hang out with geeks, enjoy. And I'm working with another attendee on a book that he's writing for his blog. And a week ago, he talked me into co-presenting with him. So as of a week ago, I was like, I'm co-presenting, okay. And then last night, I'm on the panel. So all of that was social networking with people I had never met before. I've been working with Stuart Pittman for few months now, just met him yesterday in person. So I find these virtual social networks a vital part of business. You know, and as Ruby was saying, these frameworks are very important. You have to trust people, you have to have the same frame of reference, you have to know where you're coming from, and you sort of have that purpose in mind. And when all that comes together, then you get a group of friends. It doesn't matter whether they're sitting in front of you or whether they're being represented by a bunch of pixels on a screen.
Okay.
Well, I think that's interesting, but I also am a little bit of a devil's advocate, because I don't get a lot
of the online social networking that I see, because although, you know, Blogger ostensibly is about social networking, but it has a, you know, to your point about the framework, I mean, it has this purpose about sort of exposing women's voices, blah, 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 and also connecting women in community and all of that. But when I go, and I, too, am on Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and LinkedIn, and my problem with them is that not everybody has the same framework on those sites as I do. So I have people, and I'm hoping people here can explain to me why I should be really into Facebook and spend hours on it, like people I know seem to do.
I can't help you with that.
Awesome. Yeah, Amber says it's awesome, and I'm like, because not everybody has the same framework I have, so I have people inviting me to be friends that I don't know. I mean, okay, I get when people follow me on Twitter that I don't know, I think that's weird, but okay. I've allowed that to happen, right? There are settings, I allow that to happen. But people inviting
on Facebook, though. What? You don't have to friend those strangers on Facebook.
Oh, I don't friend them, but I don't understand why they're on LinkedIn. It's worse on LinkedIn, because that's supposed to be professional. And if I don't even know you, why would I? But then there are people that do, and they want to collect. So there's these two warring mentalities of collect as many people and friends and followers as you can, and be selective and have it mean something. That's my perspective, obviously, since I'm giving it this qualitative spin of having it mean something relevant and significant. And so I'm looking, where is the solution where the brains would have to match before, I don't know, what do you guys think out there? I find it a little overwhelming, and I find it that so many people don't share my frame of it, that I get, like, what is the point of all of this? What is this really doing? I understand meeting people online and actually meeting them in person many, many times. But some of these organized sites seem much more about notch, putting a notch in a, not a bedpost, but a black book that gets your role in. So I thought this book was
spam.
Spam, yeah.
It's mostly spam. I'm sorry.
What's mostly spam?
So many of these social networking sites. I'm not saying all of them.
That's a little bit of a redux, but it's true that there are people, for example, Twitter, which you mentioned earlier, is sort of microblogging site where you can send and receive the posts from your phone. And you do get people requesting to follow you so that you'll see their thing, and they're basically just like a spam blog, they may be like a spam Twitter, but that doesn't mean that everybody using it. It doesn't make every blog a spam blog either.
Well, no, yeah.
It's like if they every email you get a spam, even though a lot of it is.
The worst example is Rappley.
There's a hand up here.
Day I might be freelancing in Phoenix or, you know, Chicago. And, okay, let's go grab a beer. Let's go talk.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on that if I could. And you're right. It's like yesterday with Jason Calcanis in his workshop. He was demonstrating Twitter and how effective it was. But the little thing of, you know, calling me, I don't think my phone's working, and within minutes he had brought a school on the phone. And then a few minutes later, some guy who he literally just basically offered a job right there, and my understanding was taking hard of it. I think part of what we've run into, especially those of us who've been on the internet for a while, you know, with the blogs or new and my social networking people, is we run into what I call celebrity syndrome. We don't know them, but they feel they know us. You know, I get people who want to hook up with me with LinkedIn, and I'm like, please remind me how I know you, because I'm kids and I, you know, I don't know your name. And I'm sitting here trying to be like, who is this person? And I'll get back, and they're like, oh, I've been on the Social Capital Network for 3 years, and I've been following everything you do, and I've gone through your title classes, and I just want to, you know, hook up, and I'm just like, oh, okay. You know, but I think that's part of what you're going to be running into, especially with Twitter, you know, stuff like that, is that just because you don't know them doesn't mean they don't know you.
That's exactly right. We're the kind of people who are male, So what I get the same thing is I get a lot of requests, and I do the exact same thing. I'll usually say, please remind me how we met.
Are you so much nicer than me? I just ignore
you. Well, yeah, sometimes. If they look my useful, then I will say that. But the fact is, there are people have these different understandings of what these things are for. Now, LinkedIn is probably the most explicit of social of purposes because it is for professional networking. That's what it's for, and it doesn't even work for doing anything else. It's not useful for arranging social outings or for meeting single people because you can't tell if people are single on it, you know. One second. But even with LinkedIn, you know, I get requests from people who, like, I used to work at Planned Parenthood, so did over 300 other people.
Yeah, I don't think it's vague. I think it's that they do that little, who else worked here?
Right.
And I'll just stand out for whoever worked
here. Yeah, no, I actually never met you, and no way am I going to say that I trust you professionally. So it's easy with LinkedIn to say, there's sometimes some value with, like, say, Facebook. Sometimes I'll see someone, I'm like, oh, they know all these other cool people. They might be a useful person to know. And then I'm not sure, because I actually feel like still it's gaming the system to make friends with people you don't actually know. But there's some value in it, and it depends on how you want to use the tools, too.
Say it's that framework thing. What is the framework for Facebook? And that's more of a, hey, you look cool.
Yeah. So for Twitter, where I'm just like sending out my thoughts, I don't mind who wants to listen to those, so I'll let people follow me. But on Facebook, it's very personal, for me at least. And Facebook's purpose is much more social, although you can use it in a lot of different ways, but it's built as a social tool. But I found a lot of people on there professionally. Okay, Ed, and then...
To me, LinkedIn is like Facebook for business. I mean, Facebook in its original purpose is a way to meet people with them to have sex. And,
or copy notes.
Right. And LinkedIn is a way of, like, hooking up, like, I met you at a conference, give you a job. But there's a whole realm of purpose-built social networks within businesses right now. Wachovia is rolling one out later this year and early next year to about 11,000 people. It's going to be like Facebook. You can put personal pictures and all these links up there. But it's all about I've got to go sell loans to this business. Does anybody know anybody at this business? Or Bob in accounting knows how to do this thing, but Bob's off this month. Who's in Bob's group? I can find that. I can see who's online. So a lot of companies want to emulate Facebook and go beyond LinkedIn, which they just see as a big resume portal. But they don't really trust Facebook because Facebook owns your information. So they're either building their own or they're using these small vendors who do the sort of 6 degrees of separation thing. I just wrote a big long article about this, so I won't talk about it for an hour. But I'll come down. My real point is that there are any number of social networks in which we're all involved, and in terms of business, social has its own meaning in terms of private or school affiliation. So my guess is we'll all be part of numerous social networks. For me, mine centers on my blog, which I'm newer on Facebook. But the idea that there's just one that captures everything is no more realistic than saying, I have this many friends in this realm, and that's my entire life.
Yeah, in fact, speaking of business, a lot of businesses use something called social network mapping, where you actually survey and then illustrate these ties in a community. And there are a lot of ways to measure networks as far as how dispersed they are. Are they overly centralized so that if everyone's relying on this one person and that person gets sick of being overloaded and being a bottleneck at work, they quit, and then nobody knows how to even connect to each other anymore, things like that. And so that's it's very, very interesting to think about network structures.
I want to comment on what Ed was saying. One of the things I think should be happening, even if, and I'm pretty sure it will be happening, is in the very near future, every business should have probably will have a social networking section of their website or their business for the employees and their vendors, clients, whatever. So that people talk. People talk after hours and stuff. Maybe they don't want to hang out personally. Maybe your perfume is a little strong or whatever. But you're living in today's society. A lot of people are working here and commuting from way out here, and they don't hang out after hours simply because it isn't feasible. So I think that social networking tools such as Ning, which is sort of basically a roll your own hosted social networking site, and all that are going to be a vital part of business in the future. So that if I go to work for, say, Walktopia, one of the things I get, you know, I get an email, I get a cubicle, I get a desk, I get a boss, and I get a username on the Walktopia social network. So I can immediately start, you know, just discussing things like what's up with this merger and am I going to, you know, be here for 6 months and lose my job or whatever. And just talk and, you know, like you said, I'm going to be meeting with this client tomorrow. Does anyone know this person? Are they a vegetarian or going out to lunch, whatever? So I think it's going to be a very vital thing.
Yeah, I was going to talk about, touch what Ed said. There's already a site like for video professionals. They sell products, lighting, cameras, tripods, all this stuff. So, but they also have social network involved where you can show your videos, show your pictures you've taken. And it's interesting because those are all filmmakers, photographers, everything else in that community, although it's not a well-known website. But it's interesting to see that people are putting this stuff up there because other filmmakers can look at it. Photographers, and that's a good way to network in that environment. So businesses are taking that into account.
In the back forever. I just want to say that when I hear people talk about Facebook, I hear some of this, it just makes me think, those kids today, they're damn rock music.
Get off my lawn.
It's very, it's a totally different tool for them. And I'm speaking to some authority because I have three teenagers and a 12-year-old. And they use it extremely differently. You've got to understand where they come from. It's completely digital. They're online from the early age. And we have our friends. We've made our social circle. We have our stuff. These kids don't. And when they go to college and they don't have a network, they don't know who these people are. They're trying to determine who are they, what do they want, who do they have in common, things in common. But it's wonderful. And if it weren't for Facebook, I would know almost nothing about my teenagers.
Did you know what they call the teenagers call now that Facebook opened up to adults? Apparently, we are called the creepies.
That's the name. If kids find out that you're on Facebook, you should never let them know that.
Yeah, I follow some teenage cousins of mine on Facebook, and I think they're kind of annoyed. They know I'm going to talk to their parents if I see something weird.
Yeah, one thing is if your mom has commented on your wall or on your computer,
we have that new kind of telephone thing. That's true, although Facebook is unique in that most of these ones we've been talking about have like really specific functions. Facebook is really quite broad, and just this year they sort of opened themselves up and made themselves into a platform so people can make applications that sort of live within the Facebook community. And that's been that, and the opening up to all of us creepies has actually really broadened it. And I have hundreds of professional contacts there.
Yes.
It depends what you go for. I mean, we play Scrabble sometimes.
Yeah, it seems very play-oriented to me. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think we as adults probably could use a little more play in our lives. But see, today's stuff is all about, like...
Well, that's true, but there's also activism that goes on there. And one of the things, Facebook, you know, I was talking about that dense communication group. Facebook rocks out on that because what they do is every time you do something in Facebook, you know, I add a friend or I join a group, it goes into a feed, just a list of my activities. And then when you log on, you can see all the activities from all of your friends. So you don't have to go and check each one of them. You can see what's going on. It makes it very easy to spread ideas. So stuff's going down to Burma, it was Free Burma Day, wear red on this day, blog about it on this day, and there were several different groups started. It's very disorganized, but they have like thousands or hundreds of thousands of members of groups. And there are also professional... Hey, you get what?
You gotta look behind you.
You should look me up. My profile rocks, but you won't be able to see it because you're not my friend. Oh, yeah. Well, it reminds me, I know Brian had your hand up, but then I want to talk about privacy and social networks.
I just want to say that before I started blogging, I would consider myself a very social person, but I think it's more of these social networks and blogs, I think, are really a form of amplifying serendipity. So,
I said, did everyone hear that phrase, amplifying serendipity? That's a great phrase.
I got
a
blog title.
So, the possibility that if you have to be around other people, similar interests that could help you or amplify your network, you can learned really great things. And when I got involved in podcasting at the end of 2004, suddenly I met all these people involved with this, which led to me to create a conference and invite people. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I hadn't been involved in a social network that was around podcasting. So other things allow me to do some really great things. I mean, and I'm not like a person who's really good at shaking hands and meeting people in person or, you know, salesy or pitching or whatever. So having the internet allowed me to do that more confident is really valuable.
So would you say that the network helped pull you forward in terms of organizing?
Absolutely.
It wouldn't have been possible without them.
Yeah, essential.
We had a question down here.
No, I was just going to say, college students, I teach college students, and one of the news feed really, talk about creepy.
Yes.
It really freaked them out at first, and I have to really work with my students because they've been digital since day one, but they don't always understand the implication of putting your class schedule there, when you will be in your dorm room, and where you're going to be walking. And so, you know, it's a fine line. I'm not an alarmist by any means, but how much is too much disclosure also?
Totally. So it was a really funny story when Facebook launched the feeds thing. Right? They already had it to some extent, but they sort of added this new feature to it, and they didn't warn the users. And so suddenly, everybody was getting tons more information about each other than they had before, and they were very unhappy about it. But guess what they did? They made a group in Facebook called Students Against Facebook Feeds. And every time you joined that group, all of your friends would see the next time they logged in that you joined that group, and they all joined it using the feeds to notify each other about it. Within a day, they had like 500,000 members of this group. And so Facebook listened to them and said, oh, we screwed up, we're sorry. We're not going to take the feeds away, but we're going to adjust it so you can control it more. And so a friend of ours in Chapel Hill who couldn't be here at this conference, named Fred Stutzman, getting a PhD in information science at UNC, and he's done a ton of research about this, and he surveyed a whole class of incoming freshmen at UNC about how private they wanted, you know, like how much of their information they want to share. And most of them said they wanted some controls, they didn't really want to share everything. And then he looked at the data in Facebook about how much they were sharing. And they very, very, very few of them were even using any of the privacy controls available. Facebook actually offers a very fine-grained control. And if you want, you can make it so if nobody can see your stuff except your friends, or even not even them if you want to. So in that case, you can control how much information you share, but they don't really advertise the privacy features very well, so most people don't know about them and don't use them.
Yeah, because we know the majority of people stick with the default settings in any piece of technology that you use, hardware and software. So having them, but having them where you have to go find them and choose them is like not having them for like 90% of the people. So I find that kind of
they can make them a little disingenuous
and say we have great privacy controls, but we're going to make them hidden, so it's hard to find them the next time.
And I wanted to point out the weird dichotomy with kids these days. They've been on the internet pretty well, given the fact that most moms take sonograms and post them on their blog, they've probably been on the internet since before they were born. And yet they don't seem to grasp the concept that the internet is forever. And they know the Wayback Machine, the Internet Archive, and yet they don't understand that these days, you know, employers and colleges are getting very much more, tech savvy. And I just finished a year with AmeriCorps, my second year, working with inner city kids out in Nashville. And when we got hired on, I actually did a presentation about this. We were all so responsible for facilitating a training. And I was telling them, I mean, if you're in college, you're partying, you know, you're doing keg stands and what have you, you probably don't want to put this on Facebook in my space.
Like, for example.
Great contract.
Oh, there we go. All right. Just to make your point. Oh, yeah, the top one, that's not me.
Yeah, clearly.
I don't know where I'm going.
What I do.
Yeah.
How about my program director? Was telling us that's the first thing they do when they get your application to AmeriCorps. They go get Facebook, they go get Google, they go get MySpace, they get the Internet Archive with your name. Mm-hmm. They don't want to see the cleaned up MySpace you put on 2 days after you emailed your application. They're going to go back 5 years and take a picture of you inside the giant hamster ball bong
you know, and be in everybody else's backwatch.
But I have to say, this came up at a session we did at South by Southwest in 2006 about professional and personal blending. And someone from the audience brought up the very intelligent fact that within about 10 years, all those people who are digital natives are going to be the bosses. And they're going to think you're weird if they can't find your stuff online. So I'm not entirely, you know, a fear of the...
I'm not worried about not being able to find it. I'm just saying we need to be more selective about what we allow people to find.
You need to manage your presence. You need to have a presence. You know, it's quickly becoming that, you know, if you're not well-versed in these and you're trying to, say, internet marketing or online advocacy, these are just basic job or business skills that you have to have.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, I think it's not a really long-term problem that people are going to be shocked by what they find about you online. I think it's a very short-term problem.
They're going to get used to it. They're going to assume you did some partying in college like George Bush did.
I
just kind of what you were saying just now. I don't know if it's really a fair assumption to say that kids don't understand that the internet isn't permanent. Maybe they do, but you know, why jump to that conclusion? Because I kind of feel like if we're saying, you know, oh, here's what you should put up and here's what you shouldn't share, that's just reinforcing these arbitrary standards of like what it's okay to talk about and what it's not okay to talk about. Everybody does stupid stuff. Everybody has personal lives. It's just some of us choose to not like have this artificial filter. You know, I post about my sex life. I post about that kind of stuff. If anybody has a problem with it, that's their problem. If anybody doesn't want to hire me because of it, well, that's who I am. That's too bad, and they're losing out on a good potential employee. So I think there's potential for this kind of thing to really break down those arbitrary barriers and help everybody realize we're all people. We all did, you know, something stupid in college. I mean, it's really not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I did know when our program manager mentioned that she checked everyone, I did note a few faces when... And you can see I'm thinking, okay, what was on my...
Right, and what are my settings on that photo album from that party?
Okay. I didn't see anyone panic, but I did see some interesting looks.
I do think it's reasonable to choose what is worth it to you to say, as Amber does, you know, if they don't want to hire me because of that, that's their problem. So I used to be a political blogger, and I was blogging under my name, and I did have very strong opinions. And I should say that I had my consulting business, and I said, if someone doesn't want to be my client because they disagree with me politically, fuck them, I don't need them. And I was willing to stand by that, and that was how I felt. I didn't feel that way about talking about my sex life. And I'm like, I don't feel it's important to me to blog about my sex life, so I'm not going to. And so I was making distinct choices about what I was passionate enough about to sacrifice for and what I was not. And I think it's reasonable to highlight that that might be something to think about, but I agree with Amber that I don't think we should decide there's a black and white, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate from a business.
And can I just amend what I said really quick?
Yeah.
Because I also want to acknowledge that it's not fair to just say, you know, oh, well, they don't want to hire me because they don't like what I wrote. Fuck them. Like, I do realize, too, that that's a privilege to be able to say that. It's a luxury to be able to say that. 5 years ago, I didn't have that luxury to say that. You know, I needed a job. I was poor. You know, I couldn't go around. You know,
I was without a paycheck for 2 years, to do something I was passionate about. So yes, it's a luxury, but
I feel like, you know, everybody makes their own choices.
That's what I
respect everybody's choices, but for me, that's where I am now.
Yes, David.
It was interesting. I'm talking about stays around forever. This one, here's a record. Say something about Elon College is doing. They went around and mined some of their students, what they could find when their students, just kind of let them know, we know where you are, we can find out what you're doing, we can find all these things. It was, I think, very timely. This Elon College down the road is luring their students, trying to educate them.
They're ready for that?
Posting is
so that Elon is doing this interesting thing where they actually it's an experiment, like, see how much they could find about some of their students, and then we'd tell them, like, let's see, we found this up just to make them more aware of how much information
they have. They had a situation last year where some of their students got in trouble.
Well, there was also a kid in Wilmington who was actually killed in a police raid because there were some pictures of him and his friends, you know, joking around guns. And so the police came to him because he had stolen, like, a PlayStation or something. They came and did, like, a violent armed raid and shot the kid.
So,
some of those, there are ramifications. It's not so much the, I'm trying to say what choices you need to make, but you do need to make these choices.
Well, when I say no, I believe you really need to manage your online presence, whether it's your MySpace account, Facebook, LinkedIn, manage all of them. If you don't like emails, turn it off. The features are there. And if, like, for instance, I have a MySpace account. I check it once a month. I don't really use it for business purposes. Therefore, I'm not really worried about getting instant email. Facebook, the same way. LinkedIn, I do have in emails if I want to contact you via LinkedIn, so I get that instant notification. But I really believe you need to manage it for employment if you're looking for a job. And still, we have the risk of identity theft out there. And that still is a big issue with open social networking. Social network, those big Facebook get hacked, or LinkedIn get hacked, and there's a lot of people in trouble. And same situation with kids. I think you need to communicate with them and educate with them on what they do and put online for the future. If they go to college, they try to get an internship. They're drinking it, and some CEOs or some of the higher rankers won't look at that and be like, no, can't do that. I can't hire them because of your Facebook account. So I believe there's some type of goal. You need to educate them online, just like you educate them in life. And on another note, I had for social networking for myself, I had to separate my tech ideas from my personal ideas from my religious ideas. I created this religious blog site, and then left my identity in it, so you wouldn't even know who the site was. Then created my own life. If I want to talk about my personal life, I didn't like this, I saw today, I didn't like this car, I didn't like this show. That was my life blog. In my tech block. So I think you can imagine, create your own identity, and go from there.
Yeah. How many people here use any of these, like MySpace or Facebook and stuff like that?
Well, it's a branding issue, basically. And for a long time, branding has been, a business thing. But whether we like it or not, in a global virtual environment, we all have a brand. And you have a choice. You can manage your brand, or you can let your audience manage it for you, because you will have a brand. And if you don't determine what that brand is going to be, what you want it to be, like the gentleman up there separating that as a tech and everything, then other people are going to make that decision for you. I'm sure we see these companies who think they're one thing, and they try to do this one thing, and then their clients go, no, we think you're something else entirely, and that's how we use your product. What their customer is, that's their actual brand, no matter what the business makes. And that's going to be the case.
That's life, right? Because I have a friend, I always use an example, a friend I have, Joe, before I met him, I thought he was quite aloof and cold, turned out he was shy and introverted. I mean, this happens to people all the time. When I met him, he was one of the best people ever. I had branded him a certain way by an external thing. So, I mean, this is life.
The internet just
amplifies.
Yes.
I don't think this is a new thing.
Yeah, no, it's not new. It's just a new way to do it.
I've been on there for years. You know me, when I was a child, don't ever write anything or have a photograph taken of yourself that you don't want the entire world to see at some time in your life.
Well, the problem is now you don't have control over people taking your picture and saying your name online. We've had many examples.
Don't put that in.
The content. Yeah,
listen, I have Photoshop. You don't have to do that. I can make it.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to do anything. I'm in the Alyssa school of manage your identity by flooding the market with the information that you want to have out there. But that doesn't work for everybody.
Can you
hardly
see them. Can you do the hands?
Yeah. Right here. We'll come back. I'm an active duty Marine, and I just recently got stationed down in Captain Jim. One of the things that I work in my shop, because I have a lot of Marines that are underage, it's like, they're really young, they're into this digital age, and they're all partying, taking pictures and whatnot. It's like, but I told them, I'm out there for like talking, just out there socializing. It's like, we've actually caught Marines, like underage drinking. Adultery, which is going on in the military, it's like you post a picture, you can use that against you, because I told them just to be smart, just like we're talking about. I'm trying to educate, it's like, you don't want to have, I know you have no control, like you can be at a party, someone taking a picture, but I tell them just try to be smart, especially if you post it on your phone. You don't want people to know about it.
And that's the thing, it's not just, you know, if you take your own picture down your cake stand or whatever, it's someone else can take it. And you don't know it's up until your boss comes, you know, shows you and says, okay, Bob, what's this with the high heels and the super dress?
So camera fun, three parties.
Good luck with that, yeah.
Yes.
I was going to give an example of, I tried to do the right thing, and I pulled the paper and complained about racist literature in my driveway. And now if you Google my name on page 2, there's Barbara Nelson and I'm on a hate group. Mm-hmm. You know, they're boasting about someone complaining, and it's just really creepy. And I really wanted to make that good stuff, I think, just to get that. Yeah, you can't find
it. I wanted to make a point of that someone behind me said, don't do bad or do good and you're okay. I think that's naive only because, not because of all of the things you said which are valid, but perception is reality. So it's not, you know, you're actively managing your personal brand, but perception is reality. So any picture or any text on Twitter or anything can be perceived by somebody else in a totally different context.
And your idea of doing good might be someone else's idea of doing bad.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, you could get an email just for being good.
Right.
And what you were saying about Flickr and having somebody post a photo of you, how you don't put it on the page. I want to talk about what responsibility do we all have not to post things about other people that can make the look bad. Knowing that there are people out there who will deny you a job because you had a photo of what looked like a joint in your mouth, but wasn't.
Did anyone hear her question?
Sure.
She's talking about our own responsibility not to infringe on other people's privacy, but of course, those who think about that, that could be a question.
Yeah, and you know, just how can we all be more responsible in terms of what we put out about other people, about our friends? I stopped going to some social events because I know people are going to be there with the camera, and I don't want to be on guard about having one too many jello shots.
Well, I think we're going to have to shut things down now. We've got a little bit of time for a break before our next sessions. I'd like to thank our panelists for being here.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of UnConcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.